What's up, Fail Nation? Usually for the first week of the month, I like to do my solo episodes, but because I did one just a couple weeks ago in the middle of January, I'm going to hold off until the month of March to do a solo one. And it was also Corey's birthday this past week, so I wanted to do a throwback to this episode, which is one of my favorites that I've ever done, since there's a lot of new listeners that may not have heard this when it first got released a couple years ago. So without further ado, here's my interview with Corey Stevens.
When we think about mental health, we imagine people that can't get out of bed, they can't shower, they don't have friends, they don't do anything. They just have their covers over their head and laying down in bed. It's like, well, sometimes it looks like the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year. And sometimes it looks like a guy that just won a tennis tournament.
What is up, everyone? I'm Kyle, and I am the host and founder of the Freedom to Fail podcast and Fail Nation, a community where failing while pursuing our dreams is a positive and taking uncertain chances is celebrated. This podcast is for those who have a dream of starting a business or doing something they have always dreamed of, but have been held back by their fears. Our purpose is to share the unsuccessful stories of successful people so that you can learn how to take the first steps towards achieving your dreams. You deserve to live a life full of freedom and free of fear. Let's do this.
Okay, so today I am honored to be sitting here with Corey Stevens. How are you doing, man?
I'm good, dude. I'm tired today, but I'm good.
For those of you who don't know him, you really should look him up. He is incredible. He's the owner of the founder of Taft Shoes, which are hands down the coolest shoes and boots in the entire industry there. Like, I'm not even overselling this at all. You can literally see his shoes on people like Dwayne Wade or The Rock or other famous people have you seen on?
A couple big ones, James Harden, Andre Iguodala, Tim McGraw. I mean, just a bunch of cool people, man. Yeah. But I mean, most important is just like normal people, you know, like that's what the business is made on. And so the famous people are really cool, but the cool thing is like the, you know, tens of thousands of just normal, regular people that wear them every day.
Have you had any cool stories from customers that have reached out to you and just shared their story and their experience?
Yeah, every day. My favorite ones are when people will be like, dude, I was at this party or I was at this wedding reception and I was wearing Taft and this other guy was wearing Taft. So we like partied all night together because we were like in the Taft family. And that's the coolest thing. Like a lot of times on Instagram, we get pictures of like two guys together that didn't know each other,
yeah,
but they both had Taft on. So they took a picture to send it to us. Like that's, for me, that's my favorite part.
I've definitely been there. Literally last week I was wearing my boots. I was just out with some friends and another guy was like, are those Taft? And we connected and just became
it brings
good friends.
Together,
yeah,
man. Like it's pretty, that's the coolest thing to me.
And the thing out there, if you haven't seen the shoes, like the reason why they're so noticeable is just because they are extremely unique. Like the styles are things that you will not see for any other brand out there. So I'm just curious for you, what are some of the inspirations? Where do you get your inspirations for your shoe designs? Because they're so unique.
Well, thanks, dude. That's definitely kind of what our platform is stuff you can't find anywhere else. I think for me, I draw a lot of inspiration from really vintage old stuff. And also with women's shoes. Women's shoes, often female designers will take more risk.
Yeah.
Women are just a bit more forward in how they dress and what they wear. And so if you look at the women's shoe market, there's actually a lot of variety and a lot of cool things happening. Men's is pretty boring. And so sometimes I'll just get inspiration from other women's companies too.
That's awesome. One thing I forgot to mention too, just another shout out for why Corey is the man there. He recently was named the EY Entrepreneur of the Year. So I just got to put that plug in there. Like not only is he just a genuinely awesome human being, but he knows his stuff when it comes to business too. So
that's kind of you, man. I'm definitely learning on the job. But yeah, that was a special event for me and my family. So thanks for
mentioning. Of course. Yeah. Let's go back to the beginning with Taft. What inspired you to get started with business in general? What inspired you to become an entrepreneur?
I never, ever wanted to be an entrepreneur.
Okay.
It's pretty uncomfortable for me in terms of the risk and the volatility. And so it was never on my plans. I was going to school. I studied linguistics, got my degree, and I'd been working 4 years towards management consulting and I didn't get an offer. It was heartbreaking and I prepared for one thing and it didn't happen. And so I kind of was left just like, with no job, essentially. And my wife was pregnant. We got married pretty young, and she was pregnant before I even graduated school. And we had no way to make money, really. And so starting the business definitely came out of necessity. And it also came out of from an opportunistic mindset. Like, I saw a product or a category that I thought I could do something different in, and I went after it. But again, I would have definitely preferred to go get some stable, boring job where I had a 401k and health insurance and all that kind of stuff. There were definitely, you know, still are a lot of discomfort in what we do as entrepreneurs.
So I like that you bring that up, because I think that's a really big point there is, as entrepreneurs, I don't think there's ever a moment where we're going to feel 100% comfortable at all. What are some of the things that you do to overcome that, to make it so that you can still function?
That's a great question. I have to do things that I do find a passion in. I'm way into sports. And so at my office, we have huge TVs and we play sports. I kind of am flexible with my work hours. Sometimes I come in at 9:30. Sometimes I come in at 7 a.m., work till 7 p.m. Sometimes it's 5 p.m., you know?
Yeah.
I think that if I just was on the grind all day long, 24/7 for 5 years now, it would just be too much.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I'll play tennis in the mornings, or I'll go play soccer, or we'll have a Taft soccer team, or, you know, just injecting things that help me remember that there's a lot more than just work. And so we've tried to combine, I guess you could consider it work-life balance a little bit, but it's just infusing things I like that give me little bits of joy, like our even the simplest stocking the fridge with stuff that each of us enjoys. You know, we do these huge Costco runs and everyone can pick whatever they want. And so like the fridge being stocked with vanilla Coke makes me really happy. I only drink it like once every month, but like the ability to go get Sour Punch straws or vanilla Coke in my office and watch, just listen to tennis in the background, that keeps me going.
That's way cool. I think that's a big thing there. Like, especially for young entrepreneurs, a lot of times you hear, I mean, Gary Vee, I don't know if you know who he is.
I absolutely know who he is. I don't agree with some of the things he says. He's just very polarizing, as I'm sure you know. But yeah, I think he's brilliant.
He's a very smart guy, and he always talks about just hustle, 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 hustle.
I disagree.
That's the part. Yeah, that's the part that I don't agree with.
He really glorifies like the hustle, working harder than everyone else. You know, like my parents work harder than anyone else, but they don't necessarily have much money.
Yeah,
and so I don't think money is a product of working hard all the time. And I don't think that the grind and working harder than everyone else is always the right path to success for people. For me, it's not.
For me, the same thing too. I became an entrepreneur to have more time and more flexibility with my schedule. That's 100% the reason why. And so I would get burned out so fast. And as many people do, they come out of college, they start a business, they hustle and grind for like 2 years. And then it becomes overwhelming and they literally can't stand the thought of going to work. And I never want that to be the case.
Yeah. And I think that if you can get ahead of that a little bit by just keeping what you love in the business from the beginning, sports, vanilla Coke, friends, good music in the office, like that kind of stuff. Like, I think it just kind of delays burnout a little bit.
I agree. I think that's a great tip there. Like for me, I'll try and go to Topgolf once a week with some of the guys on the team and stuff.
Simple like that, man. It really changes everything. We have kind of like this little crew of people that we get together. Dude, it's not even often. Once every 3 months for a video game night at our office. Everyone will just bring Xboxes and we'll LAN up all the different TVs and we'll just do these like late night video game nights. And that's a really special time for me because it's bonding with some of the team members in a very different environment. It's at our office still. So that's kind of cool because it's like, I don't know. I think you're right on it. I think you're spot on.
So let's go back to the beginning of Taft now. You said you started it out of necessity, but if I remember right, Taft didn't even start as a shoe company, right?
No, dude, it was No Show Socks. My wife and I had gone to Europe before we had our baby. I'd saved up all my scholarship money and we went to Europe. And I saw all these dudes in really great shoes, but no socks. It's a very kind of European, feminine, you know, fashion forward style. And I grew up that way too. I would wear my shoes without any socks, but there would be socks, but they were just like my mom's peds, we call them. So I was asking around in Europe, like, you know, are you wearing socks? Are you going barefoot? And most of them were going barefoot, and going barefoot in nice leather shoes will trash your shoes really quickly. And so I had this idea like, man, I grew up wearing no-show socks, but they were women's no-show socks. And at the time, no one was really making no-show socks for men that were colored and bold and cool.
Yeah.
And that also stayed up on your heel.
That's the worst part about them.
It's so frustrating to have to go grab and pull them up. And it's annoying. I just thought, man, we could make like thicker, more durable men's no-show socks that were also cool and patterned. And so when we got back from that trip, I immediately started looking for no-show sock factories. I started designing. I was going to the local university, figuring out how to use the design software. And it was so sketchy and poorly done. But that's how we started. It was just no-show socks. And then we eventually launched a Kickstarter campaign.
With that Kickstarter campaign, was it successful right off the bat? Or how did that go?
It was, yeah. So our goal was quite large. It was $23,000.
Okay.
And we raised $46,880.
Wow. More than double.
You know, I thought it was going to be like hundreds of thousands of dollars. But yeah, I'm really proud of that because the price point was really low. You know, it was like $12 a pair. And it was just hustle, dude. That was just pure sending personalized messages to hundreds of my Facebook friends, asking everyone to share it, emailing everyone I know, a total thrown together, had no idea what we're doing kind of thing. But yeah, I got funded. So that was how we started.
So it started as socks. When did the transition to shoes come into play and how did that happen?
So we were a sock company, but we were growing on social media quite quickly because of our cool pictures. But we weren't taking cool pictures of just socks. We were taking cool pictures of shoes with the socks. And so we were going to Nordstrom Rack, buying up all the cool shoes they had, photographing them, and then returning the shoes. And so that way we were able to have 90 days of photographing all these cool shoes. And so when I'd go home to California, I'd hit those Nordstrom Racks because every Nordstrom Rack carries different inventory. And so we had a lot of followers that probably thought we were a shoe company because our Instagram account, which at this point already had hundreds of thousands of followers.
Wow. Just because of your picture quality?
Just because
and stuff?
Of our pictures. Yeah. We started from zero. We never, ever purchased a single follower or anything like that. It was totally organic and legit, but we were just taking cool pictures. And so we realized one day it was like, man, we can have this small sock company with a low average order value.
Yeah.
And low cost to produce, or we could try and build something really big. And we wanted to try and build something really big. And we figured we kind of had this realization that if we have hundreds of thousands of men that like shoes, and so we could pick and choose which shoes we bought and kind of test different things in front of them. And it was always the really unique stuff that got the most likes and the most comments. And so at about the late 2015, we sampled some shoes from a factory in Spain. And then we ended up launching them really unexpectedly in November of that same year. So we've been doing shoes for about 3.5 years now.
Okay.
And it's been wild since we started shoes. Socks was really cool. That's how we started. That's how we were able to get off the ground, but shoes has really been where our business has taken off.
I did not collect shoes very much until the past couple of years. Honestly, stumbling upon your guys' shoes was like what got it started.
How did you find?
Just Instagram.
Really?
Yeah. I think just one of my buddies
like an ad or?
No, it wasn't an ad. It was just back organic. I think he had like posted a picture with his shoes and I was like, dude, those are so cool. Where'd you get them? And he had like tagged you. So I went to your Instagram account and just saw that they were insane.
And had no idea we were from Utah.
No idea.
From you.
Literally no idea. Like to put this in perspective, we're literally doing this interview 3 blocks from where I grew up.
Yeah,
that's how close.
In my house.
Yeah.
Yeah. In my house right by Kyle's childhood home.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Yeah. It is so crazy. So such a small world there. The fact that my favorite shoe company in the entire world is literally blocks away is just so cool there.
Yeah,
so,
man, that's cool.
So I have a question out there for you. I know some of our listeners probably have ideas for products that they want to be able to design and manufacture and source. How did you guys go about finding your producers, your suppliers?
That's a question that I get asked a lot because it sounds hard. But for us, actually, because we had a pretty big Instagram account, we were actively getting hit up by shoe factories trying to make shoes for us. And so they didn't even know we weren't a shoe company. They thought we were a shoe company and they're trying to get our business. And so we were always getting hit up by people in Italy and China and Spain and Portugal and Turkey to get our shoes made. And so we started just making samples of whatever. Yeah, send us whatever. Because we thought, if anything, we can photograph it for our socks.
Yeah.
But then we started finding like some pretty high quality shoe factories hitting us up. And so when it came down to it, I had designed some shoes and I sampled them with a few different factories. And then I eventually flew out to Spain to the one that ended up being our manufacturer.
So is it like a small manufacturer or do they do it for like lots of other companies too?
We now have three different factories.
Oh, wow.
A couple in Portugal, two in Spain. So I guess four factories. So, Spain was our first one and it was a small factory. It's not what you'd imagine. It's not this, you know, our type of product is not,
it's very artisanal.
Yeah. It's not like a sweatshop or something like that. That you'd like a mass manufacturer. It's like a workshop. It's mm-hmm. like, workbenches and people that have been doing this for decades, you know? So it's not huge. It's probably the size of maybe like half a soccer field.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe like six tennis courts. So it's pretty small, but now we take up the whole factory basically and we've expanded to other factories.
That is so cool. And you guys have just seen insane growth since you've launched there. It's really cool there. Like, didn't you guys just get a round of investors coming in?
Yeah. So last March we raised our first money. We raised a few million dollars for the business and we brought on some investors and now we have a board and now I don't own 100% of the business. So but it's been great and it was absolutely necessary. The business was growing quicker than I could really handle on my own and we needed guidance. We needed mentorship and we needed people that knew what they were doing to help steer the ship. Because it was just, I think we realized that it had some really major potential to be something special and I wanted help.
I think that's something that's really key out there. Like entrepreneurs, when they start a business, they want to keep it all, which is understandable. It's your baby.
Awesome. Which is totally appropriate in some situations. But for me, we didn't need to raise money. It wasn't about the financials. It was about the emotional support because, you know, as an entrepreneur and as a CEO, you can't be 100% honest with your employees. No one understands the burden of being a CEO and a founder, except other CEOs and founders.
Yeah.
And so I just found that for me, Taft was extremely lonely and I needed people that would be in my corner and could pick up my calls in the middle of the night or early in the morning or on the weekends when I need help. And it's usually not about Taft.
Yeah.
It's just like, dude, I'm freaking out. I feel like this is crumbling. Please tell me everything's okay. You know, that's what they've been most valuable for.
That's exactly what I love about this podcast. And that's what I wanted to like touch on just moving forward here as well. Like Taft has been amazing. You've seen a lot of success. You're going to keep seeing a lot more success there. But people don't understand that going into business or even just whatever you're doing in life, whatever your goals are, it can be really, really lonely going through that grind there.
Oh, dude. Yeah. I mean, I've been pretty public and open about my struggles with business, but it goes back to what I said. Entrepreneurship is not comfortable for me. And I don't think it's comfortable for anyone really. I think at the beginning, you know, there's risk takers and people that want to just, they're okay to sleep in their car and start something. And, you know, that's cool. After a few years, that's not sustainable and you need help. And so for me, Taft has been, even though my wife is a co-founder of the business, it's just lonely. No one really shares the same burden as you do. You know, everyone else on the team doesn't panic when there's a low sales day.
Yeah.
Their paychecks just come and they, to them, it's unlimited. It's kind of like when you're a kid and you open the cupboards and you just expect food to be in there. You don't think where it comes from. You don't think what your parents did to get it in there. You just expect there to be food. And I think for most of the business, they just expect shoes to be sold and paychecks to be made and growth to be had just without anyone doing it. But the CEO is the one doing it and charging after new territory in terms of growth. And so entrepreneurship has been really difficult for me. And I honestly don't think I would ever do it again, to be honest. Working for someone else sounds really, really nice. But yeah, for Taft, it's been hard, but we have great people in our corner that know how I feel and are here to help.
That's amazing. I appreciate you just sharing all that there. Let's talk a little bit more about that. So what has been the hardest part for you?
That's a great question. The hardest part with Taft for me has definitely been where I find my self-worth. Like I feel so strongly and have literally built this from zero And so I identify so much with the business. It is a piece of me. It is most of me. And so when there's hard times, I take it very personally. When people say something mean, it hurts my feelings.
Yeah.
When they don't like their shoes, it pains me. And when people are critical, I take it very personally and I'm very sensitive to it. And so the hardest thing for me has been trying to not identify my own self-worth and value with the value of the business. I found that on good sales days, I was happy.
Yeah.
And on bad sales days, I was panicked and cranky. Taft is not me, and I am not a business. I am a father. I am a husband. I'm an individual. And so I think trying to keep the distance at an appropriate level with the business and just be okay with, you know, if Taft fails, I am not a failure. I am just as valuable if Taft is successful than I would be if Taft were a failure. So that's been the real tricky balance for me, is just making sure that I know that I'm a valuable human to my family and to those in my life, whether Taft exists or not.
So if you were to see yourself, somehow have a time machine and meet yourself when you were just starting that up, starting Taft and going through that and feeling that again, like, what would you say to yourself or to someone else who maybe feels that way, like ties their self-worth so much into what they do and into how their business is run?
First off, if I could meet myself, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road where I am now, I think I would be ecstatic at what has happened, you know, in terms of the success we've had, the personal accolades that I've won, the business's success, the growth, the money. I would be floored if I could tell myself as a student, look, you're going to be the CEO and founder of the 56th fastest growing business in the country. It would be crazy, you know, especially if you told me it was shoes, because it's like, what? I would never, ever, ever plan on this. In terms of advice, you know, I'm still trying to figure this out for myself. I definitely don't have it figured out, but I would say when I think about the most successful people, you know, inventors, Abraham Lincoln, politicians, some of the most special people in the whole world and in all of history have been massive, quote unquote, failures before they were successful. I think that failure is just a part of the journey. It's an uncomfortable part. And Taft is my first go around. It's not a failure. And so I don't really know what that feels like.
Yeah.
Someday I probably will. But right now I don't really know what that feels like, but it's got to be scary and it's got to feel pretty horrible. But I would just say, I would remind myself of all those successful people that failed and lost elections and, you know, didn't have a successful invention or, you know, whatever until they finally hit it. Life is about a lot more than starting successful businesses. Be a good father, be a good husband, be a good man. And that's where the real worth comes from. You can't take away someone's self-worth. I believe that we're all children of God and our worth does not change with our success levels. And so I would just remind that self-worth doesn't come from business.
Yeah.
It comes from just being who we are and just being kind and good people. And that's most important.
I couldn't have said it any better there. That is amazing there. I agree with that a lot. For me, one of the reasons why I resonate so much with you, and we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording there, but like you guys know out there, I went through a divorce recently and it just was really hard for me. I went into a long period of depression where I just literally felt like I couldn't do anything at all. And there were days where I would just sit there and be in bed and not get out of bed at all. And there were days where, like, this is the first time I've actually said this, but like there were days where I literally would sit in bed and just be like, okay, what is the best way that I can just end things? I went down a really, really dark path there in that time there. And luckily for me and for everything else there, like I wasn't bold enough to do any of that. I was too scared. I just like would think about that and I wanted it to happen because life was so miserable. But thank goodness it didn't happen because yeah. I've learned so much from that time. And just Corey is so open and honest with just like his struggles too. He doesn't just share the highlights. Social media is a place where you will almost always see only positive things.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing is you go to Taft account. Yeah, he posts beautiful pictures and stuff, but he'll still take the time to go and record a video of himself just sharing like where he's at, like mentally when he's struggling and stuff. And he's done that multiple times. And it just really was inspiring to me to see that, oh, someone who's like been able to find success has gone through these things too. Like, I'm not alone. And that's the biggest feeling and the biggest struggle for me, like you mentioned, is as an entrepreneur, a lot of times you feel like you're alone and you feel like there's literally no one out there who understands what you're going through and stuff. And so with you just like sharing all of those things, what has caused you to like be willing to be vulnerable just in front of the masses, in front of people that you don't even know?
I mean, I just want to be clear that this is a current struggle for me. It's not something I've figured out. It's not something that I've overcome. So I'm still trying to figure it out for myself, but I think I feel like our success and our audience and our reach is for a much larger purpose than just selling shoes. And so we've been told to not do that kind of stuff, that it hurts the business, whatever though. I don't care, because it's like we, every day I can reach almost 1 million people. And so if I feel like we need to share something on the personal side, then I'm going to do it. And I don't care how it affects the business, because I believe that I have a responsibility to share those types of things. And when we do, the outreach is insane. And everyone's like, this is why I like Taft. And so everyone thinks, or some people think, that it hurts the business. It's the very reason people shop with us a lot of times. I think also there's a, for me personally, there's a, an accountability factor. I feel like if I'm open, then I can't hide it. And people are checking in on me and they're asking how it's going, asking how I'm doing. And I personally need that accountability. If I were to keep this to myself, I would probably have taken my life. I don't know if being that frank is okay. Suicide is a daily struggle for me. It still is right now. But I feel like if I open up and share that with people, then I have to be accountable, and maybe it will help me when I'm weak to not make that bad decision.
This is why I love you, man. Seriously, 100% for this reason, because
it's heavy, dude.
When I was going through my divorce and I had those thoughts, that was the exact same thing. That was what saved my life, was just finally being like, okay, I'm struggling with this. I can't keep it inside. I need to talk to someone. That is the key with people that struggle with depression or anxiety or all this stuff. Like, if you keep it inside, it just becomes a ticking time bomb.
That's right, dude. Yeah.
And it just will blow up unless you get it taken care of, which is as simple as talking to someone. I found I literally feel like a weight gets lifted off of my shoulders. Even if I just mention that I struggle with it, even if I don't even go into details, but the more people I bring in and share my story and my struggles with, the lighter of a burden I feel, because it gets shared among all those people.
Yep. That's exactly right. That's what I found too. And I have a pretty big audience I can share with, and I feel like it has lightened my load a little bit.
We've talked about this too, like Brené Brown, and her whole thing is just vulnerability and shame. And so that was what really got me started, was watching her TED talk about all of that there. And so it's really cool that you are just very open and vulnerable with all this stuff too, because not only does it help you, but it also helps the people that you are talking to that hear your message, because they resonate with it.
Yep. Yeah, dude. I mean, I'm not just trying to help myself. I feel like, I think that there's a couple of things. One, people that are open about things typically share retroactively.
Yes.
You know, it's like, I have overcome cancer, so let me tell you about overcoming cancer.
Something that they've accomplished that they don't deal with.
Yeah. And so I think it's kind of interesting that, or not interesting, I just think it's kind of powerful that some people can share in the moment while I'm still kind of in that thorny rose garden, rather than looking back and just seeing the roses.
Yeah. You know?
The second thing is, I think that, you know, while Taft is still really small, and I don't have the influence of most people, but I think that it is powerful for people to see like someone like me share about it. When we think about mental health, we imagine people that can't get out of bed, they can't shower, they don't have friends, they don't do anything, they just have their covers over their head and laying down in bed. It's like, well, sometimes it looks like the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year. And sometimes it looks like a guy that just won a tennis tournament. And I think that we need people sharing that can't get out of bed. We also need people sharing that are the CEO of Taft. And again, that it sounds somewhat boastful. I don't mean it that way. I just think that the variance and the the lots of different opinions and stories that are being told are helpful so that we don't just imagine the people that can't get out of bed, because it's also the happy guy you sit next to at work that goes home and thinks about taking his life. It's not just the guy that can't hold a job.
That's a really good point, because the stigma about mental health is the guy who can't get out of bed, who just has no desire and motivation for life. And I feel like sometimes, like if you deal with mental health issues, you'll go through those parts. You'll go through that part.
I am that way a lot of times.
But the valuable thing, and the thing that I think will be extremely important for you guys as listeners, is just recognizing that the people next to you probably in some capacity or another deal with mental health issues there. Yeah. Like it's literally something that I firmly believe that everyone struggles with at some points in their life there. And so it's the entire spectrum. You can be extremely successful and commit suicide.
Did you struggle at all before your divorce?
No, that is why I'm so passionate about it. Because growing up, I was that guy, like, I hate to say it, but I was literally that guy where someone would be like, oh yeah, I'm depressed. And I'd be like, well, just think positive, like do that. It's so much more difficult than that. Like it's literally a sickness that people deal with. And so then when I got divorced, people would be like, well, you've been just so positive, like you'll get over it. Just like be positive. And I was like, it's not that simple, man. Yeah. I literally can't change it. And so that was where the flip switched for me. And I realized, wow, it is something that can come on at really any point in your life. And for me, it happened to come at a time where I had gone through just something horrible that I never would wish on my worst enemy. But for other people, it can come just through like the ups and downs of everyday life. And so it was crazy. I never thought that I would be someone to deal with depression or anxiety to the extent that I literally was thinking about taking my own life until it happened. And then it scared me, because not only did it scare me for my own sake, but then I was like, wow, there are so many other people who are going through this. And I didn't understand any of that there. And so it was really powerful to me, and a really good way for me to recognize that everyone has their demons. Everyone has their struggles that they deal with. Even if they're smiling, you look at Hollywood or you look at literally any sort of successful people. And there are a lot of times when those are the people that are struggling the most inside, because success is not what creates happiness in life. And so it all comes down to like what you mentioned earlier, finding your value in being a good person and being the best you that you can be. It doesn't have to be external based or anything like that. And going through my divorce, that's what I thought it was. I was like, oh man, I'm not a good person because I got divorced. And now all these people are going to see that I got divorced. And so they're going to judge me more and more and more. Yeah. But it had nothing to do with who I was. And so then once I was able to switch that and focus on what I was going through and how I could become a better me, that was when it became easier for me to deal with, because instead of focusing on the outside voices, I was focusing on myself. And I still struggle with it to this day. Like, I mean, my divorce is very fresh still. And so like, I don't want you guys out there thinking that I'm just this guy who's got it all put together, because I'm not. And I mean, you guys probably now know more of my story than literally anyone else. And so, you know that I got some crap going on there, but I love doing this podcast and talking to people like you, Corey, because selfishly it helps me a lot. Yeah. And I think that it brings a good message to everyone else out there who's listening too. Being that open and raw about the way success is in reality versus how it's perceived in the public as well.
My wife and I have talked about how it's interesting how some of our most publicly successful moments with the business have coincided with the hardest personal moments. And so I just don't want the world to just see the positive things, because, or not the positive. I don't want to contribute to like that social media facade of everything's only perfect highlights and I have things figured out.
Yeah.
Because in reality, I really don't. And I don't want people to think that I do.
I think
that doesn't help anyone really.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't help yourself either. It's just the worst thing to do. That's why my social media, I try and like share things that I've learned or mistakes that I've made and things like that, just because I want social media, my social media, at least anybody who's interacting with me, to see the real side. Like social media is only used on days that we're feeling at our top, but I feel like it would be even more powerful if we used it on days that we were feeling at our lowest.
Yeah.
Oh man, we got deep here. I love it though. It is so good. It's something that I'm extremely passionate about. And so I love being able to bring this message to the world there. Too. Let's go back to the business side a little bit there. I know you said that you are not someone who deals well with uncertainty. You would prefer to have kind of that job where you have a boss and you have that guaranteed salary, 401k and stuff. What is stopping you from just selling Taft and getting out of the risk side of it and just being able to move forward with more of a stability?
I think that when I first started Taft, I definitely did it with the intention of selling it as soon as I could. And then I realized we were having an impact in people's lives because of what we were doing and how we were doing beyond shoes. And so now I feel, you know, we'll sell someday, but I think that I feel this duty or responsibility to our audience and our customer. Like our customers are my friends and they're like, some of them are literally like family to me now. And I feel like we owe it to them to stick to what we're doing and keep changing the footwear industry little by little. And then also selfishly, there's just, you know, we're still a very, very small team. We haven't even really started.
You were telling me you only have 11 employees right now.
That's right. And three of those are part-time. And so we haven't even really started. And so stopping right now would just not giving it a fair shot.
Yeah.
I think that Taft can be, you know, a couple $100 million business. And so we should try a little before we do something like sell.
Yeah. So what are some of the goals or the plans that you have for Taft to be able to reach those kind of lofty expectations?
I mean, we're actively, aggressively hiring some of the key executive positions. So certainly filling out the team is going to be a big one. Getting back to what I do best will be helpful. Product and brand. I've been kind of bogged down with like the CEO stuff that I need to get back to where I'm most valuable to the business. And then spending more money. I'm personally really, really frugal. I struggle to spend money on myself and on things that, unless it's an absolutely vital thing, I just struggle to buy it. And so I think that getting other marketing people on the team will be helpful because they'll spend more money. We have all this money and we don't spend it. So that'll be a big helpful one for sure.
Cool. Yeah. I'm excited to see what Taft does there. One thing that you said that is so true is you literally like the Taft audience are your friends. Like that's how me and you connected at first is your story from Taft resonated with me. So I just reached out and luckily you saw it and responded there. So I appreciate that, but it's awesome. Like the fact that I feel like I've gotten to know you a little bit there, it makes life so much more fun and enjoyable. And so you definitely have been doing a great job with the way that you run Taft in that aspect.
Thanks, because I really, really feel that way. I think some people would be like, you know, we love our customers. It's like, yeah, everyone loves their customers because they give them money. For me, it's like I have an emotional connection with our audience. We've shared personal, emotional things together in direct messages and on Skype calls, whatever. I'm a father and I'm a husband and I'm you're younger than me, but I still feel pretty young.
You're young.
I'm 30. And I know the stress of providing for a family. And so when I see people spending hard-earned money on our product, that emotionally really affects me. I feel a lot of gratitude to our customers that buy our shoes. And I wish I could just give each of them a hug. Unfortunately, I can't. When we were smaller, we could write thank you notes and stuff like that. But right now it's like, I really love our customers. And so I do feel a responsibility to them. And you're right. Like, some of them have become friends, real, real friends. And if not a real, real friend, at least an absolute person that I know is on my team. And if I'm somewhere crazy in the world and I need a place to sleep for the night, I feel like I could actually reach out to these people and find a place to sleep.
For those of you that own a business out there, take notes from that because what he's saying is 100% true. That has literally been my case owning Majestic as well. Like I literally just finished cleaning Corey's windows too. I'm out there. I get to know people doing my job and some of my best friends and my closest confidants and people that have really inspired me and I would call like close friends and mentors have been people that I've met through work there. I really liked what you mentioned about them spending their hard-earned money on you and like on Taft and stuff, because there are a lot of businesses out there that just look at their customers as a dollar sign. And that's not the way that you really create value or lasting impact with them. Yeah. And so that's been something that you've seen. And I can also vouch for that as well, just with Majestic, is that is how you create lasting relationships. And that's how you guarantee that your business is going to be around.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that's awesome. We've gotten a lot of good stuff here, a lot of good nuggets there. Just to kind of wrap up, we do what's called the rapid round, the lightning round on here.
Bring it, dude.
So
bring it.
We got a list of about five questions here. Just whatever comes to your mind really quick within like 30 seconds per question.
I'll be quick.
Question number one is, what is your biggest fear?
Not being able to financially provide for my family.
Okay.
Easy. I worry about it every day.
Yeah. Number two, what is your personal definition of failure?
Ooh, dang, dude, that's a great question. My personal definition of failure would be not trying. No matter what you're doing, you can try. You don't have to go start a business. You don't have to go design shoes. You can do anything. I think just try. Give something an effort. For me, failure would be never trying to do anything really great.
I think that's awesome. We have so many people that have things pent up inside that they never even get out because they're not willing to.
That's such a shame. That's such a shame.
Okay. Number three, for you personally, with your success, what is one habit that you have that has contributed to that?
Perfectionist. I am like to a fault. Uh-huh. It's not always a good thing. I think with Taft, it helps personally in my family, in my marriage. It's not a good thing. But with Taft, my perfectionism is a strength.
What do you mean by perfectionism? Like, what are some things that you do to make sure that things
everything
go perfect?
Has to be perfect and the best. And even if it's perfect, it could be better.
Do you have like a system in place to?
No. It's just like this personal standard of I will not sleep until it is perfect and the best. That's how I was just wired, man. Since I was a little kid, that's how I was in school and sports. That's always been the case. And it's still something I'm trying to overcome. But with Taft, for the meantime, it's a strength.
Yes, definitely. And then the next one is, what is the best piece of advice that you have ever received?
Oh, dang. Do what I want. I'm a major people pleaser. And so I don't do what I want most of the time. I do what Kyle would be happy with, or what my wife wants me to do, or what my kids want me to do. And I think doing what I want is kind of taking control of my life and being the leader and the person at the front of my life, making the decisions and doing what fulfills me has been really important to me.
I mean, it goes back to what you said to start out, just finding ways to do what you love to do at work.
Obviously, selflessness is really important. And I think I'm a great husband and I think I'm a great father. But always not doing what you want, it's just, it can really wear you down. And I think it's important to make sure we take care of ourselves as individuals so that we can then take care of those that are in our circles.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's why on the airplanes, they have you put your mask on yourself first before you can help someone else.
Exactly. And I think that I got into a habit of just always caring about other people's oxygen masks. And I've, over the last year, I've tried to be a bit better about taking care of myself too.
And it's hard as a people pleaser, speaking from experience, because that is me too, of T.
Yeah.
But it's really hard because you feel like if you take care of yourself first, that you're being selfish. And so it is a big internal struggle with that, because it's just, whenever I am trying to take care of myself and I say no to someone else, I feel guilty.
Yeah, exactly. That, and we got to get over that, because it's just not the way it's supposed to
exactly.
be. Be okay with saying no to things, be okay with turning down opportunities. We got to be okay, or it will affect us. Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm turning these in not lightning round, man. I'm sorry.
I'm
rambling.
I love it. I love it there. And then the last one in this is, what is your favorite book and why?
My honest answer is Mistborn.
Okay.
By Brandon Sanderson. Like, that's not the answer I usually give, because it has nothing to do with business.
Yeah.
It's just, I've found that fantasy books have provided a really nice escape for me from the stress of work and life. And fantasy has really helped me. I'm not like a major nerd. I mean, I am a nerd now, but I'm usually like read my business books, but now I'm like, fantasy has given me an outlet and a refuge from the storms.
That's funny. I've got a new business that I've been working on. And so my business partner, we were together last week and he literally said that that was his favorite book too, but I've never read it. So oh, I'll have man, to give it dude, a go.
They're addicting. They're so good.
Just to kind of wrap up there.
Oh, one more book.
Yes.
Solve for Happy.
I've never heard of that one.
It's great. It's a very scientific approach to happiness.
Okay.
And it's, he's a big shot at Google that his son passed away very unexpectedly. He obviously really struggled with that. And so he, in kind of programming language, he's solving for happy, and it's brilliant. I would recommend it for sure.
Okay. Yeah. I will check that out. I'm always looking for new books to read with that. So. Happy. Okay. Do you remember who it's by?
I think his name is Mo Gadot. I'm probably way wrong. I think that's it.
Okay. And I'll look it up and put the link that's in the description.
Like some famous person. That Mo Gadot comes
Mahatma
to
Gandhi, I think.
Yeah, it comes to mind, but I'm not totally sure. I think that's what I see on the cover though.
Okay, cool. And then just to wrap up there, for our listeners out there that want to connect with you and hear more about your story or learn more about Taft, where can they find you and connect with you?
So the website, www.taftclothing.com. That's our website where you can buy shoes. If you want to connect with me personally, you could hit me up on LinkedIn. If you hit up Taft's Instagram account, it will get to me. If you send a message or, and then personally, my Instagram account is Corey Stevens, KORYSTEVENS. And my email is Corey, KORY@taftclothing.com. Any of those channels, I will get it and I will hit you back.
I can definitely testify to that.
It takes a little long sometimes, but I'll be there.
I get it. You're a busy man. So I'm just grateful that we finally were able to make this happen and that you were willing to take the time to sit down with me and talk, because I've been enlightened for sure. It's been definitely a great conversation. And I know that everyone who listens to this, once we get it out there, is going to love it too. And just really admire Taft more now, getting to know the face behind it and the person behind it. So
thank you, dude. Thanks.
And just the last plug for Taft as well. Like, I'm not a sponsor or anything, but no joke, they're the only shoes that I ever wear, like on dates or nice things like that. And I always get compliments. So go check them out.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Corey. And we are so grateful that you took the time to be here with us.
Thanks, Kyle.